This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
You get down to the train platform and appreciate the cool wind or breeze or whatever you call the rush of air the train brings before it arrives, before you even see it or its lights, because of how much it cools your sweaty head.
That's a young writer named Tommy Orange reading from his new novel, They're There.
You find a seat at the front of the train. The robot voice announces the next stop by saying, or not saying exactly, but whatever it's called when robots speak. The next station is 12th Street, Oakland City Center. You remember your first powwow. Your dad took you and your sisters, after the divorce, to a Berkeley High School gym where your old family friend, Paul, danced over the basketball lines with that crazy light step, that grace, even though Paul was pretty big, and you never thought of him as graceful before. But that day you saw what a powwow was, and you saw that Paul was perfectly capable of grace, and even some kind of Indian-specific cool, with footwork not unlike breakdancing, and the effortlessness that cool requires.
Tommy Orange's book is a remarkable debut novel about identity and belonging. He sat down recently with Deborah Treisman, the New Yorker's fiction editor.
So, yeah, I was not a reader. I didn't do well in school. I didn't really much care. I didn't really even have curiosity about most intellectual things. And then I became a musician, and I went to school for sound engineering, and came out of that with no job prospects and got a job at a used bookstore. And
in Oakland?
It's right outside of Oakland in San Leandro.
Uh-huh.
And there was a moment I was on break from the bookstore, and I was parked outside of a donut shop eating a donut and reading Confederacy of Dunces. And I realized what the novel could do. And in that moment I knew I wanted to write one. And I wrote really weird stuff for a while that was not, I don't even know if you could call it fiction or nonfiction, or once I realized that I was going to include details about my own life, I think my writing changed and took on more form, and I moved away from experimentation.
And at some point, you found your way to the Institute for American Indian Arts in Santa Fe, and you did an MFA program there?
I did. I was about halfway through the novel at that point.
Uh-huh. And now you teach there?
I do.
Yeah. Was that your first exposure to other Native American writers?
Yeah. And, I didn't read a lot of the Native canon because it was reservation-based, and it kind of made me feel less Native reading it. So I read a lot there, and I love it. I think a more important piece was feeling like I was a part of a community of Native writers. And there's a sense there that you don't have to explain yourself. You don't have to explain your culture, and everyone knows your context. So the freedom to write into something that's more particularly your voice, it's easier to access that because you don't have a lot of people that don't understand your experience at all. And and this is for people of color in general, there can be a sense of, wait, you need to catch us up to where you're going to start. And instead of having to do that, you can just sort of start where you want to.
The New Yorker published a chapter from the book back in March. And at the time, you told me that one of your main reasons for writing the book was that there were no novels out there about urban Native Americans. Why do you think that is?
Well, since then, I've been told by people that there are books. So I don't want to offend anybody by saying I'm the only one that did it.
Yeah.
But I couldn't find, so it's they're not prevalent. I think it's related to a struggle for authenticity and feeling like you're Native enough growing up in the city. That's my only guess, is that there's a sense of not feeling like you're a part of something, so not feeling like you can give voice to something specific like that. And I think because most of the what's in books and movies is reservation-based, I think you don't feel like you're writing like a Native if you're not writing about the reservation.
Now, in your case, you grew up, you have a white mother and a Native American Cheyenne, mm-hmm. Arapaho father. Did people ever guess what your two cultures were? I mean, did they know?
Never guessed right. No, if I was in like the Fruitvale around a Mexican community, they spoke Spanish to me first every time. Mm-hmm. And in high school, I was called racial slurs for being Chinese. I never felt accepted in white spaces, and haven't really felt accepted in Native spaces either necessarily. I mean, now I am, and I've worked in the urban Indian community in Oakland for many years, and I feel a part of it for sure. But people always wonder, this just happened just this week. I was doing a signing and people came up to me and said, are you Native? And the follow-up question after I say yes was, and this is important, the well that comes before, well, how much? And I'm like, I get why people ask, because there's been a lot of fraudulent stuff and people want the real thing. And but there's just so many gradations. There's a big range of what it can mean.
The format of the book is to tell the story of a whole kind of panorama of characters who have quite different voices, and they're told in different ways. The chapter we did is told in the second person. So at what point was that always the structure for the book in your mind?
I knew two things very early on, and that was I was going to have a bunch of Native lives converge at a powwow in Oakland, and that it was going to be multi-voiced or polyphonic or however you want to say it. And that is because we struggle against like a monolithic view of our culture, and what it means to be Native has meant one very old, tired thing. So I wanted to show the dynamic range. I wanted to write characters that were different ages and were into different things that have to do with pop culture, and wanted to try to do it in a modern way on purpose to resist that monolith.
There's, I won't give away, the end of the book, which is a great sort of symphonic ending. But these characters do come together at the powwow, and there are a lot of things happening at the powwow. There's dancing, there's all kinds of arts happening sort of simultaneously. Is that what it's like? Have you been to one of these huge events?
I haven't been to the big ones because there isn't a big Oakland powwow.
Yeah.
There's a small one at Laney College, this junior college near downtown Oakland. But there is that going on. There's people make beautiful jewelry. They sell their art. They sell food. There's drums. There's dancing. It's a contest. You're trying to win money. I just thought it's a perfect microcosm for urban Indian life because it's intertribal. This is one of the things that makes urban Indian life different than reservation life, because usually on a reservation you're one tribe, and people came to cities on relocation and started up families and met other people from other tribes and made kids who now you can't ask them to necessarily just identify with one.
And it's not attended by white people. It's not a performance of Indianism for sort of tourists.
Yeah, not at all. I mean, you'll see white people with cameras and you get sort of a sense that, you fear what their intentions are or how are they looking at us. But it's definitely not for non-Native people. It's for us.
Yeah. There's been some talk about the idea that there is a Native Renaissance in the arts these days. Do you see that around you?
Definitely. And you could attribute it to, you know, the pipeline that everyone saw visibly on TV, this horrific scene of people praying and getting shot by rubber bullets. And that bringing, you know, the idea that we're still here up for people. And you could talk about it as a reaction, to a sort of counter reaction to Trump and all that he represents. Because he's very anti-Indian. He's been pretty open about that. I think these are all factors. I hope that the Renaissance isn't one of these waves, because it happened in the 70s and it happened in the 90s. I hope it's not just a temporary thing. I hope we can build something sustainable.
Do you see a lot of talent in the people you teach at the IAIA?
Yeah, there's a class just graduated with a ton of talent. Like, it made me feel like our class wasn't, you know.
You were the warm-up.
Yeah. I mean, it's a new program. It's only, I think, 5 years in. So it's coming into its own, and the students are, I think there's going to be a lot of good writing that comes out of it.
So you have some competition.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Tommy Orange talking with Deborah Treisman of The New Yorker.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.